Welcome to Account-Based Marketing. This podcast is designed as a collection of conversations with sales and marketing leaders, sharing thoughts and practical tips for becoming more customer-centric and accelerating revenue growth. Hosted by me, Alicia Linden, CEO at Momentum ITSMA, a global B2B growth consultancy and advisory firm. Welcome to this episode of Account-Based Marketing. Winning, retaining, and growing strategic accounts is hard work. And the more complex your organization, the more complex your industry, the harder and more challenging this task can be. So today I'm thrilled to have invited Jarek Lydek, America's lead for strategic account management and global center of excellence lead at Pfizer. Jarek, welcome.
Hi, Alicia. Thank you for having me and great to be here.
Really fantastic to have you with us. I know you're no stranger to complexity and you've got quite a big role on your hands as you task and look to develop strategic accounts. Lucky to kick us off, Jarek, with a bit about you, a bit about your journey to this current role leading this global center of excellence.
25 years in corporate America, since the days of university, of course. Kicked that off with a couple of years in IT consulting. So I worked with Accenture in the IT consulting space for a few years and then moved over to Pfizer and have been there since. So coming up on my 23rd year anniversary with Pfizer.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I think we still need two more years. I think it's 25 and we get a little extra vacation. So it's
for the pen.
Yeah, it's a nice milestone. I don't think we even get a pen for 23. So I keep waiting for 25. In that time, I've been started off in sales for the traditional sales path. And then have worked through sales, marketing. I did a global health fellowship opportunity. Also moved then into the key account management space, then into key account management leadership, program development and establishment at the global level. In that time, also I've had some really tremendous opportunities to work with different organizations like SAMA, ACAM, Cranfield University, yourselves here at Momentum ITSMA. So it's amazing to say, you know, I think depending on who's listening, 25 years might sound like a long time or it might not. It feels like a long time to me when I say it out loud, but doesn't necessarily feel like it's been that long. So yeah, it's been a great path, been a great ride. One quick disclaimer before we get started, and I just want to put this out there. Everything we'll talk about today, everything I'll be speaking from will be from my own personal perspective and experience. Nothing is coming from the perspective of nor representing any points of view of Pfizer, my current employer, but just from myself.
Really looking forward to diving in, Jarek, particularly you talk about 25 years in some ways. Nothing has changed when it comes to winning and growing strategic accounts. And also everything has changed as you think about the kind of buying process. As you reflect on some of your professional services experience, you know, IT consulting, and you're clearly a really long-standing career also at Pfizer, you know, do you find that there are some big distinct differences in those two different industries when it comes to strategic account management? Are there some key threads that you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the foundation of it, right? So whether you're key or strategic account management, whichever language an organization uses, I think, you know, that Pareto rule, that 80-20 rule applies, right? And 80% of the foundation of what any organization's doing or in key or strategic account management really needs to be fundamentally very similar, right? If you're not doing that 80%, then you're not really doing key account management, right? You're doing some sort of a flavor of it or some sort of an application of it for your company or your industry as you move into that space. And then, you know, there is that 20% nuance. There's going to be differential based on the organization, based on the industry, based on the market where, you know, the organization exists. So there definitely will be some variation, but in my opinion, you've got to get that 80% right or else you're not fundamentally doing, you know, key account management.
Yeah. So make sure you focus on those priority accounts. For our listeners, Jarek, it'd be great to unpack a little bit about the pharma business. You know, key accounts are very different to an IT consulting firm. Can you give us a bit of a flavor for pharma businesses generally? You know, who makes up your key account base? Because I think there's a really important nuance as you think about your strategic accounts.
Yeah, sure. So it's interesting because I think a lot of the questions that I field in the key account management space, the answers start with, it depends. And, you know, it's the worst way to start an answer, I think. And from the recipient of the answer is always that sort of moment where you're like, ugh, can't you just give me a finite definition of what I'm asking you for. I think, again, when you're looking at, you know, pharma or you're looking at healthcare, it's going to depend on the company, the focus of the organization, the offers of that organization, right? Are you service oriented? Are you product oriented or both? And as I mentioned before, the market, right? Where does the company operate? Is it singular? Is it multinational? And what do those operations look like across borders based on differences in governments, differences in payers, differences in needs in healthcare and things of that nature? So broadly speaking, I'd say it depends. More specifically in that pharma space, I'd say key accounts generally will be represented by large integrated delivery networks. So large health systems that generally will many times own their own payer arm, many times will own a consulting organization to help sell their services to other organizations of similar nature. Wholesalers and retailers are huge, right? And they'll have much bigger impact in some markets than others. And I think governments, ministries of health are sort of similar in that space, right? The government of any given company will generally be a large customer for key account for most of the healthcare industry. And I think, again, even other organizations within the industry, right? So if you're a CDMO or contract development manufacturing organization, your key accounts may be very like organizations within your space. So it depends, I think, is the short answer. And then, you know, there's a whole host of different types of key accounts depending on the focal point of the supplier organization.
And what about the compliance dimension? I mean, we see this a lot within pharma. We see it a lot within financial services, you know, more broadly life sciences as well. You know, there's the way in which you're engaging key accounts is very different to a kind of traditional, maybe a tech vendor or a consulting business looking to sell into market. It'd be great to get your take on that, particularly for listeners who aren't used to going to market for life science firms.
Listen, legal compliance is going to exist in every single industry everywhere, and for good reason, right? Whether it's finance or tech or pharma, healthcare, et cetera. Absolute necessity. I think one of the pieces that make things a little bit different is when it is the focus on pharma or the healthcare industry, it's looking at patients, it's looking at health, it's looking at quality of life, right? These are all things that pertain to and are important to everyone on the planet. Doesn't matter who you are. Everyone wants to be healthy. Everyone wants to be happy. And there have to be safeguards in place to ensure that the organizations that are supporting that work are doing that work in a compliant way, right? We've seen, you know, there's plenty of examples. You can go into the public domain and there's plenty of examples where you'll see where things have come off the rails a bit in the past with different industries, with different providers within different industries, pharma being one of them, where you'll see lawsuits, settlements, et cetera, based on not following compliance and legal guidance. So I think for the organizations themselves, it's critical. For the welfare of patients and, you know, in the global space, it's absolutely necessary. And it's just the reality of the confines within which you must work, whether it's pharma, you know, IT or finance or another industry. And again, I think that those guidelines are there absolutely for a reason. And those guidelines are there to support the work directionally correct, right? So that the work is being directionally correct and staying within the confines of where it needs to operate to do the best job that you can. And when all of the organizations in that industry follow those guidelines, the industry, you know, I think succeeds at a much higher level than any one organization going after, you know, chasing the carrot by itself, so to speak.
Jared, I know as we were preparing for this conversation, something that you and I are very aligned on is this idea of, you know, creating a win-win. How do you, you know, make sure when you're developing out your strategic account programs, when you're driving excellence around the globe and sustained growth, you don't just think about the short term, you don't just think about, you know, the benefit to perhaps the organization you're working for, you actually think about the sustained value for the accounts. That's where you're going to win. And I know you've got to build on that of a kind of win-win-win. We'd love to unpack how you're thinking about creating this kind of win with your customers.
Yeah, sure. So I think the first part of that, and you mentioned it just now, whether you're looking at key account management or account-based marketing, both of these models are longer-term models, right? Neither of them is let's set it up and see success in 3 months, right? It's just not the way they're built. So I think that long-term benefit is a key facet to keep in mind. And the idea of, you know, the win-win, or, you know, what I might call the win-win-win, which sounds a little cheesy, but it's really identifying the reality that there must be a benefit for the supplier, there must be a benefit for the key account, and then there must be a benefit for the patient in this case, or the customer's customer. I think, you know, if supplier organizations keep in mind the customer's customer, right, and consider how that supplier organization can support the key account in serving its customers, that's where not only do you get to this point of co-creation of solutions, but there's almost a level of automatic buy-in, right? So if it's completely obvious, whatever the proposal is, to both sides, and both sides see that as, you know, as an obvious win for each of them and for one of those customers' subsets, then usually, you know, those organizations are happy to work together. I think, you know, again, we talk about customers, and then in the healthcare space, we talk about patients. Another piece of this, I think, is really important to keep in mind, regardless of what type of a supplier organization you may work for, is your key accounts are going to have a lot of different customer types. So in the healthcare space, the obvious knee-jerk reaction is, it's all about patients. And it is, right? That is a customer group. But when you step back and speak with, you know, executive level leaders within health systems, they'll absolutely tell you that customers are represented by patients, but customers are also represented by providers, right? Physicians, nurses, pharmacists, et cetera. Customers are represented by payers, insurance companies. Customers are represented by governments and ministries. So this is another place where I've seen organizations have great success in longer term partnership and longer term relevancy with their key accounts, when they will obviously engage with that, you know, that obvious patient or customer type. When you can move to supporting compliantly, of course, supporting work with other customer groups, that's where you start to build that longer term relationship and really get embedded with those key account organizations within the future.
I mean, I think that's real fantastic advice there, Jared. And only a seasoned professional would pick up on that nuance. I think we, you know, often organizations talk about being customer centric, but that the point you've made there transcends all industries, you know, being able to not only live and breathe in your accounts world, but what they stand for is serving the needs of their own customers. So being able to understand those customers, and you know, many of those are and end up being different segments. How easy is that to do in terms of at scale as a best practice across strategic accounts? What's your experience in large organizations, you know, where there's a lot of activity happening, there's, you know, a lot of internal initiatives that are getting driven? It's a challenge to be customer centric, you know, to go that next step further of the win-win-win of being driving success not only for your own customers, but your customers, be that patient groups or providers, as you described. You know, what's your experience been? Is it an easy thing to pull off?
Short answer I'd say is no. But I think there's an element of momentum and time and trust behind that. So I think, again, so the answer I think is it depends. It depends where you are as a supplier today, right? Are you a supplier who has an established key account management program that has been up and running for many years, that has built trust with an organization or your key accounts over time? Or are you an organization that's potentially been more traditional sales and marketing approach, and you're shifting to a more key account management, account-centric, customer-centric approach? Those are two different places to operate from, right? And I think when I started, I said, I think the short answer is no. If you're an organization that's transitioning to a key account management, account-centric, customer-centric model, it's going to take time, right? You have to prove yourself to the key account in a way to demonstrate that you're not like all of the other vendors, all of the other suppliers in your space. And to also break away from whatever the preconception is of your organization by your customers, by your key accounts, based on how you've behaved in the past. So it's easy to come into a key account and say, hey, look, we're going to work differently with you now than we ever have before. We are now an account-centric organization. We are now customer-focused. Here's how we're going to engage with you. That's all wonderful. But I promise you, most key accounts will have heard that same song and dance from another company, and that company will have not delivered. So you have to deliver upfront. And I think each of those successes that you have, right? Each time you do what you say you'll do, each time you demonstrate a success in partnership, moves you closer to the next opportunity and shortens the timeline, I think, in developing that next opportunity. So I think it's all a bit stepwise. And, you know, I think it's a little bit of do what you say you will. And if you don't, you're not probably going to get invited back.
I mean, it's a really interesting one, isn't it? As we see trust declining accounts generally, and this idea of, you know, trust is earned in droplets and lost in bucket loads. You know, you make a really good point of it's very easy to turn up and say, hey, we're going to engage you differently as an account. Everybody's turning up and saying that. And actually then the kind of broken promises and the perception that leaves in terms of reputation is definitely a watch out. So some great advice there, Jared. How are you thinking about identifying accounts? I mean, you talked about long-term programs. This is not a kind of once and done. How do you make sure that the accounts that you're focused on, that 80% that's going to do the top accounts that will drive 80% of the growth and the potential of the organization?
Identifying accounts, for me, that starts with a really robust segmentation and selection approach. So, of course, you know, you start with the full universe of accounts, and then you want to segment them in some sort of a way into, you know, three or four buckets. And then out of those three or four buckets, of course, which are your key or your strategic accounts? And then what are you going to do differently with those accounts? So part of that identification conversation for me is traditionally what I've seen is you will have organizations who will look at past performance and current performance with their accounts and say, okay, well, where have we done the most work in the past? Where are we having the most success today? Obviously, those are our key accounts, right? And it's not a bad model. It's just, in my opinion, not the best approach for key account management. So knowing that information is really important because that's where you want to ensure you're protecting your existing business, right? That's going to be important to all supplier organizations. But when you're thinking about key account management, when you're thinking about longer term, when you're thinking, you know, future first, how do you identify the accounts that are not only going to be relevant in the future to the market, but relevant to you as an organization? And are you going to be able to grow with those accounts into the future? So when you're thinking about that identification conversation, to me, it goes back to that segmentation and selection model. And it's looking at those financial and non-financial parameters the same way you would in any traditional segmentation and selection model, but weighing more heavily, you know, those future potential parameters. What is it that's going to demonstrate the opportunity to grow into the future and not just protect where we are today?
Got it. I absolutely love that. Today's top accounts are not necessarily tomorrow's top accounts. So have that in firm view. I'd love to dive in, Jared, and get a bit gritty in the detail and I guess unpack a little bit of what you're seeing in the market. You know, selling into healthcare providers feels, you know, critical as you're communicating this idea of delivering better care, and you know, clearly there's a big connection and correlation for pharma businesses. How do you think about partnerships in key account growth? So are these providers, you know, partnerships that will help you develop accounts? Is there a different dimension here?
Yeah. So when I think about, you know, delivering better care, when you're thinking about any supplier organization in the healthcare space, when you're thinking about hospitals, when you're thinking about the providers in those hospitals, everyone's in that space to support patient care, right? In one way or another. And there are so many different disease states and so many different nuances across those disease states that how do you bring together, you know, I think you think about how do you bring together the resources, the intelligence, the creativity of all of these organizations and these people to better serve patients, right? And we talked earlier about the win-win-win for the supplier, for the key account, you know, of course, in this instance, for patients. I'd say in this way, in this framework, many times the application of key account management in the pharma industry is looking at how do you support a key account in population health management. So in the simplest of terms, how do you help an account or a key account support the identification of patients earlier in a disease state? So get them diagnosed earlier than they may have otherwise. How do you support an appropriate and compliant treatment of those patients, right? So generally, you're going to be looking for nationally accepted guidelines and things of that nature. And then finally, how do you support the compliance and the adherence with those treatments? So how do you find the patients earlier, get them treated to guidelines, and then keep them compliant with their medications on the long term? And that process, you know, again, I think from an integrated delivery network or a healthcare provider perspective, that process in itself can be replicated from disease state to disease state. And I think that's where in the pharma space, you start to see different organizations with different strengths in different disease states really bringing to bear, you know, the science, the background, the experience to help support those key accounts in those efforts with those patients. That's where I've seen the majority of that win-win-win in the pharma space.
Really play through. That's really fascinating. And that, you know, clearly there's multiple dimensions to this, Jared. And you talked about it there a little bit. I want to unpack this idea of it's quite hard to focus on, you know, not just your customers, and there's multiple segments, some of whom could be partners. You know, what are some of the challenges that you've seen when it comes to actually driving growth from these strategic accounts, you know, really accelerating growth from tomorrow's priority accounts? You know, focus is clearly key here, but, you know, what are some of the challenges that you've seen?
Yeah, so I think that the two biggest challenges that come to mind for me are going to be internal challenges to the supplier organization. One is what I would call top management involvement. I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. And the second is organizational commitment to a key account management or a strategic account management program. So top management involvement, right? When we think about organizations, especially when organizations are looking at building a key account management program or platform, generally there will be some sort of sponsorship. Or you'll have an executive that will sit up and say, yep, I'm the executive sponsor for the key account management program. They nod their head and say yes, but many times they're not really sure what they're nodding their head and saying yes to. And then as the program builds, there can be a moment of like, ooh, hold on, where is all this resource going? What are we doing? I don't quite understand. I thought it was just, you know, fill in the blank, whatever my understanding was of the account management. So I think there's a big difference between sponsorship and involvement. So, you know, I'll use that term top management involvement. Top management can be senior leaders, executive leaders, whatever it looks like, you know, in your organization. But this idea of a top manager or executive being involved with one or two key accounts on an annual basis, at least, right? A top management representative actively being the champion for the program, the CAM or SAM program, inside of the organization, right? Keeping the momentum behind the organization. And then I think as well, this idea of commitment to participate, right? So I've seen proposals, I haven't seen it actuated in the real world, but I've seen proposals where executive leaders are meant to agree to a two-year commitment with a singular key account. And there is a co-created report card that's generated semesterly to help guide the sort of best fit involvement for that executive with the key account. So I'm not a CEO. I have no idea what the time constraints look like on CEOs. I can only imagine what a day-to-day and year-to-year looks like. In that vein, I think the more direction we can give and the more clear direction we can give to executive participation, the better chance we have of getting that participation, right? So if I can say, here's the support I need from you, these are the things I need you to do, that's more palatable than we'd like you to participate in this key account management project or program. Those two things, yeah, one I think will be much more readily accepted than the other. So that top management involvement piece for me, I think, is really important.
I mean, it's something I've seen as well time and time again of an exec has been assigned to a key account. There's a name on an account plan somewhere, but what is the actual role? And particularly when you go exec to exec, you get execs who are very customer-centric and, you know, want to be engaged. Have you seen that change much in the last few years? You know, I feel like execs are more accessible now than ever before, that with the way we adopt technology and just how buying teams have been more disparate. Is it improving? Is it getting better in your experience and what you're hearing in the market?
Yeah, again, I'll start with it depends. Like, some places, yes. Some places, no.
That's the name of this podcast episode right there.
Yeah. It depends. I think in some places, absolutely, yes. In other places, you know, it's sort of business as usual. So where I'm seeing, you know, where I've seen success is if we think about it, any given key account manager, right? So you have the key account manager and then the sort of extended team that the key account manager works with, or integrated account team, cross-functional account team, whatever the name is for that in your organization, the group of people that engage the account, where the CAM sort of sits at the center as the orchestrator. There will be the need for executive involvement. There should be the need for executive involvement at some level with any given true key account. So that more peripheral team, like the further you move out, right, you will see that representation. And what I was saying earlier, the clearer we can be about the ask, the more apt we are to get the buy-in from, you know, that sort of C-suite personnel. And what tends to happen, at least from what I've seen, is if you think from the perspective of a key account manager, right, most key account managers aren't going to be able to match the experience and the business acumen of a C-suite officer. Not taking anything away from the key account manager, it's just a matter of, you know, time, experience, responsibility, exposure, et cetera, et cetera. However, when those opportunities arise, right, when there's an opportunity to sit with someone from the C-suite and you're able to get that engagement level, in my opinion, there have to be, or these have to be really brokered as top-to-top meetings, right? You have to bring in someone from your organization that can sit and have a conversation at the same level as the C-suite of that key account organization. And I say this, you know, to my team all the time, you only have one chance to get it wrong. If you secure that meeting, you know, that opportunity, that touch point with someone in the C-suite, and you don't come into that meeting and knock it out of the park, you're not getting invited back, right? You've got to bring value. You've got to have that person close the door after the meeting and sit down and say, when can I get them on the books again? That was fantastic. So in my opinion, what you were sort of asking, how are those interactions changing? What's that change look like with top management? That's where I'm seeing it the most, is where you have that exec on the supplier side who is fully read in and prepped and ready. And I think to the other piece of your comment, the right person from the supplier side at that exec level, right? There are people who will come from a background of customer engagement, will have had roles in sales and external marketing, key account management. Those are probably the people you want to lean on. The people who came up through internal paths who may even still have some hesitancy to engage with external customers likely won't be the best choice. You know, so I think the other piece of that is think critically about who you're bringing to that meeting with the key account leadership.
You mentioned two things, so top management involvement. It would be great to understand that feels like a big one and we could talk about it for a long time. There's a second area that you mentioned around this kind of stop-start organizational approach.
Yeah, so that's second one, right? I think it's a challenge and an opportunity. Same with TMI. It's a challenge and an opportunity for a supplier side. This idea of organizational commitment, right? So when you're building a key account management program from the ground up, or when you're developing an existing key account management program, what I've seen is there's always going to be fits and starts, right? In most organizations, there's going to be huge momentum in the beginning, and then things will taper off, and then they may pick up again if you're lucky. You'll tend to see, you know, someone will be the champion of the cause, but 3 months, 4 months in, when they're not seeing short-term immediate results and the sales numbers aren't skyrocketing, all of a sudden, there's a fade. Right? The support for key account management starts to fade relatively quickly. So I think there is this reality that in the short term, many times, right, and early on, key account management programs are going to be a cost center. That has to be an expectation set for the organization. That has to be clear. And the organization then has to have the commitment to stick with it, you know, to see the results, right? So that cost center can eventually turn into a revenue generator. And I think in this same conversation, there was a piece of work done by Gartner a number of years back where they interviewed a number of sales organizations who were making that transition from traditional sales and marketing over to a more key account management approach. And they asked them how many times had they reinvented their program, right? How many times had they rebuilt their program in the last 7 years? And almost 80% of the respondents said at least once, and many of them said more than once. So it's a reality. I think it's a massive challenge and it's a huge opportunity. So if you're going, you know, if you are in an organization who's going that direction, imagine what savings you can make and how much momentum you can keep, right? How much more effective and efficient you can be if you're not reinventing yourself one, two, maybe three times in a 7-year period, right? If you keep that momentum, where are you going to end up compared to that sort of fits and starts approach?
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Whilst listening, please hit follow or subscribe on your podcast platform to get access to our full library of recordings and alerts of all new episodes. Is there anything you think teams should be doing differently or executives should be doing differently to sustain these programs for longer? Is there anything to avoid it just becoming a cost center and being removed 1 year and then reignited 2 years later? What's your take?
Yeah, the one thing I think that organizations can do is, and again, we talked about this idea of you have a champion of the program, right? Or you have a sponsor of the program. And especially in large organizations, I'm sure it's very similar in smaller organizations. There's so much turnover that people leave companies, get promoted, move to a different role, take on another assignment, whatever that looks like. So you may have that person behind the organizational development of key account management now. But as soon as that person leaves, if you haven't built that support across the level or across that leadership level within your organization, then you're starting over. That's where I've seen sort of the fits and starts, right? Leadership moves. There's now a new leader in place who doesn't understand or hasn't had experience with or, you know, doesn't support a key account management approach. And that sales process, right, selling the benefits of the approach starts over. So I think the companies that do a really good job with this are the companies that build the belief and understanding in key account management across the executive team, across the senior leadership team, and almost create what you might consider an integrated account team for key account management inside of the organization. So you have cross-functional leaders as well, coming from marketing, coming from sales, coming from key account management. When you have that, right, when you create that sort of high, wide, deep breadth of understanding and support, leaders can move in and out. It won't have the impact that it does when you have that one person who's the champion or one person who's the leader behind it. So that's where I've seen it done successfully and then sort of seen organizations move away from as many fits and starts. So
I love it. I mean, I think really what you're saying in that summary there is make it part of your organization DNA. It's not an executive that joins the business and leaves the business. It's not a pet project. It's not something that they're doing whilst they're there, an initiative they're driving. But this is really core to the fabric of the organization. I think that's great advice for small and large organizations alike. Jared, what's really struck me from this conversation is you're incredibly attuned to the nuances of your customer base. You're clearly very client-centric and you're thinking of these strategic accounts in that way. But if I think about pharma businesses more broadly, you know, there's a huge emphasis on product, you know, research and development, patents, you know, we often talk about chasing the next blockbuster, you know, that comes first. Are firms becoming more account centric in your experience? Is this a shift that you're seeing across pharma and life sciences more broadly?
I think the answer is yes. A short answer is yes.
You've got full permission to say it depends.
I'm not gonna say it depends. I would say absolutely. It feels like everyone's moving that direction. I will say, you know, traditionally pharma companies absolutely have had a keen focus on R&D, and most are going to continue to do so. You know, the idea that research and development is not just incredibly important to, but a core aspect of how pharma serves in the healthcare landscape, right? The products and the offerings of any organization are going to be central to the organization itself. So what do you offer as a product? What do you offer as a service? You know, in that pharma space, when you're looking at innovative medicines, innovative treatments for, you know, all kinds of ailments across the planet, R&D is going to continue to be really important. Now, I would also say, you know, in the past, I'd say 10 to 15 years, there has been a sort of shift to attuning to the idea of customer centricity and patient centricity. So we hear customer centricity, patient centricity all the time. We hear that across the healthcare landscape. And I think what these big organizations are finding is, you know, if you go back 30 years, the business models of organizations are tremendously different now than they were then. Data availability is tremendously different now compared to what it was then. And, you know, the lines, the borders between organizations, when you think of hospitals, payers, farm organizations, med tech, whatever other suppliers you want to include, those lines have really started to gray, right? And now you have health systems that own payers, that own, you know, like I was saying earlier, own consulting organizations. You have a lot of partnerships across programs. You have government involvement in a lot of different ways and in a lot of different sectors. So as you're seeing those lines sort of gray between those organization types, I think the other thing that's happening is this need for a deep understanding of what, you know, what I'll call the patient journey or the patient experience, right? In this space, the customer experience and any other, you know, supplier organization space. If we can better see the world from the eyes of the customer, the patient, and not just the end user of the product, if it's a different type of supplier or the end user of a medication in this case, but also, you know, their family, patient's family, their customer's family, their friends who may be supporting them through management of the disease state, through management of medication use, through management of the device use, whatever it is. It's that depth of understanding that really, I think, really helps frame the solutions much more keenly to the needs of the customer, the needs of the patient, than to pushing something into the market because the supplier organization has it, right? And I think if we go back 30 years or more, that was really the model. Here's what we have as a supplier. We're going to put it into the market. We're going to tell you why it's great. Yeah, we hope you use it, regardless of the industry. And then you shift forward to today, and with the just absolute access to data and information everywhere all the time, things have tremendously shifted. So it's not just about the supplier organization, what they can push. It has to be, you know, this sort of pull. You have to have the key accounts, you have to have the key accounts customers pulling, wanting, you know, that solution from your organization. So I think that's the shift I've been seeing. So I think that's a long-winded answer for yes, I think that shift is happening.
I mean, I loved how you unpacked it and the kind of story around it really brought it to life. I think everyone talks about starting with client needs, starting with what your customers want. And actually, you know, there's been a big transition, hasn't there, and over your career and you know, prior, particularly in pharma. We could chat for hours, Jared. There's just so much, so many gems. I feel like you've had quite a few mic drop moments in this recording. Fantastic advice that you've shared. I want to finish on one piece of advice that you'd have for someone starting in a similar role to you. What would that sort of one tip or piece of advice to help set them up for success in a role like yours?
So I'll give you two quick ones instead of one long one. First one is
very good.
Yeah, first one I say is do the job. And second one is network quickly. So do the job. What do I mean by that? I think it's really important to have worked as a key account manager, as an account-based marketer, before you can attempt to establish and develop programs, right? Before you can build those programs. I really believe you have to have that practical experience to pull from, so everything isn't just an academic exercise that you read about or heard about. And then the second one, network. Leverage the knowledge and the experience of other people in this space, whether it's ABM or key account management. There are some tremendously intelligent, very passionate, very experienced people out there. And from my experience, they love sharing what they know. They love seeing key account management, account-based marketing grow into the future, and they want to help that. So, you know, if it's organizations like SAMA, ACAM, Cranfield University, Momentum ITSMA, you know, there's lots of organizations, lots of great people. Get into those networks and leverage those networks the best that you can. So do the job, leverage your networks.
Fantastic. Jared, thanks so much for going full circle and sharing your advice and being part of the network in sharing ideas. I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. I think we started this episode with the idea of it's really hard work. And I think those closing pieces of advice, you know, get hands-on and network are a way to make it less hard. So I appreciate you being so candid. And thank you so much for the partnership.
It's been great talking with you today, Alicia. I appreciate you inviting me to chat. And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Great. Thanks so much, Jared.
Very welcome.
This podcast is brought to you by Momentum ITSMA, a leading B2B growth consultancy and pioneers of account-based marketing. Learn more at MomentumITSMA.com.